A stitch in time saves nine. A bird in the hand is worth two in the bush. Buy low, sell high. These sayings are what we would call proverbs, though sometimes we refer to them as rules of thumb instead. But the idea behind sayings like these, the idea behind proverbs, is that they are meant to be, as I was saying to the kids earlier, these little short, pithy sayings that end up collecting in our minds and are easy to remember so that they can give us some insight as to how we ought to respond in a particular circumstance. It'll tell us what we ought to do or what we ought to say, or perhaps what we ought not to say in a given circumstance. Proverbs are meant to be helpful. They are meant to lead us into a way of wisdom, to take a course of action that will be beneficial to us and to those around us. And we heard from the Bible's book of Proverbs this morning already in our first reading. The book of Proverbs was compiled by King Solomon. The very first verse in the book tells us that these are the Proverbs of King Solomon, and it's important to understand that the fact that they are King Solomon's Proverbs does not mean that he came up with them all on his own, though he was the wisest king that Israel had had, though his wisdom was renowned around the world. He did indeed come up with some of them, but he also discovered many of them and brought them together and compiled them. One of the things that we know about Solomon is one of his many wives was a daughter of Pharaoh, the daughter of the ruler of Egypt. And we think, and this makes a whole lot of sense, that in the process of courting this woman, Solomon would have come across some of the proverbs that were written in Egypt. There is a collection called the Writings of Amenemope that was compiled and written down in Egypt before the Torah was written. And when you read Proverbs chapter 22, 23, and most of 24, and compare it to the writings of Amenemope, you discover that they are very, very much alike. The one in the Bible, of course, will refer to Yahweh, the name of the Lord, which obviously would show they've been modified. But it is clear that this one that had come from Egypt predated the one that was put down in the Bible, and Solomon, in his wisdom, recognized that there was wisdom to be found in Egypt and incorporated it also into this book of Proverbs. Solomon collected wisdom from all over the place, which tells us that wisdom is something that we can achieve and can attain, and when we discover it, we ought to take hold of it. And so Solomon's desire was to collect all of these wise sayings for a purpose. Now, those who are ultimately responsible for deciding that the 39 books of the Old Testament were indeed inspired by God to be written and compiled as they were, and therefore included in the Hebrew Scriptures, evidently saw fit to include this collection of Proverbs as well. So it would be good for us to explore it and to look at it. But when you heard the reading this morning, you might have been thinking, I don't know what I think about this. I mean, the words that we heard were kind of pointed. They were kind of incisive, maybe even offensive, depending on how you want to take it. You might remember hearing these words. Because I have called and you refused, have stretched out my hand and no one heeded, I also will laugh at your calamity. I will mock you when panic strikes you. Then they will call upon me, but I will not answer. They will seek me diligently, but will not find me. And then at the end, we say, hear what the Spirit is saying to the church. Thanks be to God, I think. You know, the reason we might have an issue with how we heard that is because these words are said of someone saying something to us. And because it comes from the Bible, and sometimes we refer to this as the Word of God, we often start to think, Is this what God is saying to us? I will mock you in your distress and make fun of you in your... Really? This is why it pays a lot to take a good close look at what's being said here. What Solomon is doing in these opening chapters of the book is referring to wisdom and then personifying wisdom itself. In this case, wisdom is being personified as a woman, Lady Wisdom, you could say. And so what we are reading here is what wisdom would be saying to those who choose not to pursue her, to continue that personification. It is wisdom that would be saying, if you don't grab hold of me, then when things go wrong for you, it's your own silly fault, is what he's trying to say. And so I hope that softens the words a little bit, but it still might feel weird to hear it that way. Well, this is why it's helpful to understand again what the point of the book of Proverbs was for when it was written 3,000 years ago. King Solomon, this man who is ruling Israel, is now in this patriarchal society wanting to pass on wisdom to his son and other young men who will be ruling over Israel and the territories that the nation is responsible for. And so what he's doing is taking this book, and then he's kind of sitting down with all of these other young men and saying, all right, guys, let me tell you how it is. And it's kind of like this man-to-man talk that might not be the approach you would use if you were trying to instruct women, for example, just in light of the culture back then. You see, the book of Proverbs was written, as I said, 3,000 years ago, in a culture that is different from ours, in a time that is different from ours, with a purpose that is different than ours. Now, today, we recognize that that which is contained in the scriptures is to be for all of us. But because of the original intention of the book of Proverbs, it's written from this male perspective with a male audience in mind. And if we understand that, then we can grasp and better interpret how to take these words. To help us with that, I want to read the first chapter from the Message translation of the Bible, because the way that Eugene Peterson has put it has given us a very clear image, I think, of this. Now, I have to modify his reading a little bit, simply because he has incorporated more inclusive language in his translation, which is certainly the right thing to do. But for us to grasp the original intent, I've brought it back to this more patriarchal thing, just so you can get this image of this king sitting with these young men and him telling it like it is. So it begins with an introduction. These are the wise sayings of Solomon, David's son, Israel's king, written down so we'll know how to live well and right, to understand what life means and where it's going, a manual for living, for learning what's right and just and fair, to teach the inexperienced the ropes and give our young people a grasp on reality. There's something here also for seasoned men, still a thing or two for the experienced to learn, fresh wisdom to probe and penetrate, the rhymes and reasons of wise men. Now let me pause there just for a minute before we go on. The purpose of talking about wisdom and pursuing wisdom as being so important is because wisdom is indeed that which guides us into a better way of doing what we do. He's going to be telling these young men, look, wisdom often means you have to exercise self-control. You need to restrain yourself from doing what would most naturally come, or maybe from saying what would most naturally be said. But wisdom also sometimes needs to spur the courage within you to do the right thing when you'd rather not, or take a back seat. This is the importance of pursuing wisdom, is knowing how best to live. And so because this is so important, the king passes this on then to these young men. He says this, start with God. The first step in learning is bowing down to God. Only fools thumb their noses at such wisdom and learning. Pay close attention, my son, to what your father tells you. Never forget what you learned at your mother's knee. Wear their counsel like flowers in your hair, like rings on your fingers. My son, if bad companions tempt you, don't go along with them. If they say, let's go out and raise some hell, let's beat up some old man, mug some old woman, let's pick them clean and get them ready for their funerals. We'll load up on top quality loot. We'll haul it home by the truckload. Join us for the time of your life. With us, it's share and share alike. Oh, my son, don't give them a second look. Don't listen to them for a minute. They're racing to a very bad end, hurrying to ruin everything they lay hands on. Nobody robs a bank with everyone watching, yet that's what these people are doing. They're doing themselves in. When you grab all you can get, that's what happens. The more you get, the less you are. Lady Wisdom goes out in the street and shouts. At the town center, she makes her speech. In the middle of the traffic, she takes her stand. At the busiest corner, she calls out, "Simpletons! How long will you wallow in ignorance? Cynics! How long will you feed your cynicism? Idiots! How long will you refuse to learn? About face, I can revise your life. Look, I'm ready to pour out my spirit on you. I'm ready to tell you all I know. As it is, I've called, but you've turned a deaf ear. I've reached out to you, but you've ignored me. Since you laugh at my counsel and make a joke of my advice, how can I take you seriously? I'll turn the tables and joke about your troubles. What if the roof falls in and your whole life goes to pieces? What if catastrophe strikes and there's nothing to show for your life but rubble and ashes? You'll need me then. You'll call for me, but don't expect an answer. No matter how hard you look, you won't find me. Because you hated knowledge and had nothing to do with the fear of God, because you wouldn't take my advice and brushed aside all my offers to train you, well, you've made your bed. Now lie in it. You've wanted your own way. Now how do you like it? Don't you see what happens, you simpletons, you idiots? Carelessness kills. Complacency is murder. First, pay attention to me. And then relax. Now you can take it easy. You're in good hands. I hope that served to be somewhat helpful in painting the picture of what the book of Proverbs was originally written to do. The king wants so much to have these young men grasp the importance of wisdom that he wants to get down there and grab them by the scruff of the neck so they can get it through their thick skulls. That this is so absolutely important. You must pursue wisdom. You have to have wisdom. And so having acknowledged that that was the intention of the book, now today we can pull back a bit, recognize that the book is meant for the benefit of all, and being able to edit through the tone and intensity and the patriarchal system for which this was originally written, we can now open the book and unlock it for the wisdom that is there for us all, so that we can explore these wise sayings, so that we can take to heart these proverbs and see how we can begin to collect them and have them in our minds, that they might provide for us an inclination as to what would be a wise course of action from circumstance to circumstance. One thing we do want to make clear right away is to make sure that we don't make the mistake of thinking that wisdom is God. Proverbs makes it clear that is not the case. Wisdom is not God, God is not wisdom. It says in chapter 3, verse 19, "The Lord by wisdom founded the earth. By understanding, he established the heavens." And so the idea is that God is wise. So why would we not want to be wise as God is? That it was with wisdom God created all things. Proverbs chapter 9, verse 10 says that the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and the knowledge of the Holy One is insight. And so we recognize that wisdom, though being apart from God, nevertheless is sourced in our willingness to turn our attention to God and what God would have for us to do. And that becomes the overarching theme of how to begin to pursue this wisdom that is so important. Well, I think it'd be good to go through some of the proverbs that we find in these chapters. Some of the proverbs are very popular. One of them here, several of you might have on a plaque on your wall in your house, for example. Here's what it says, chapter 3, verses 5 and 6. "Trust in the Lord with all your heart, and do not rely on your own insight. In all your ways acknowledge him, and he will make straight your paths." The encouragement with this proverb is to recognize that as we live our lives aware of God's presence, aware of God's will and purpose, and with a willingness to want to pursue that will and purpose, we're definitely going to be on a better path than if we choose to just make it up on our own as we go. And so here the encouragement is for us to keep God in mind from day to day as we pursue our lives. Some of the Proverbs are a little bit longer, and they paint an interesting picture. Chapter 6, verses 6 to 11 gives us this one. And once again, picture King Solomon saying this to a bunch of young guys. "Go to the ant, you lazy bones. Consider its ways and be wise. Without having any chief or officer or ruler, it prepares its food in summer and gathers its sustenance in harvest. How long will you lie there, O lazy bones? When will you rise from your sleep? A little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to rest, and poverty will come upon you like a robber, and want like an armed warrior." You get the picture there? There's really nothing new under the sun, but what the Proverbs writer is basically saying is this. Look, if all you do is sit down and play video games in the basement, then at 45 years old, you're still going to be playing on the Xbox in your mom's basement, and that is not a path to success. So get a grip and start taking some responsibility and get your butt out there and find a job. Okay, that's what this proverb is saying, to put it in the vernacular. Just saying. It's very appropriate. The words are 3,000 years old, but the sentiment is exactly the same. Some of the Proverbs are a little humorous, perhaps a little too incisive, maybe even almost offensive. Here's one for the ladies. Proverbs 11, 22. "Like a gold ring in a pig's snout is a beautiful woman without good sense." When I was in high school in the 80s, the term airhead was pretty popular, and that would appeal to the beautiful woman without any good sense, right? Here's one for the guys, chapter 12, verse 1. "Whoever loves discipline loves knowledge, but he who hates to be rebuked is stupid." That's right, stupid is in the Bible, referring to a guy who doesn't ever want to take correction. Don't be stupid, is what we're saying here. Again, fully applicable. Here's another popular one, chapter 16 and verse 18. "Pride goes before destruction, and a haughty spirit before a fall." I think we've heard that one before, and we certainly have seen it. People who get so full of themselves, so overconfident, so arrogant, so conceited, that they figure they're all that, and the next thing you know, boosh, they fall on their faces. It's like, well, you know, could have seen that one coming. The problem, though, is this doesn't always happen, does it? There are people that we can probably name who are still prideful and haughty and conceited and arrogant and full of themselves, and they get along just fine with life, and nothing bad has happened. We might say, well, nothing bad has happened yet, but certainly there are those who have been this way, and yet it still works. That's something we have to be aware of. The Proverbs are not ironclad guarantees of how life will go. These are wise sayings which will say pride and a haughty spirit will indeed lead to destruction, but we cannot say that it's a guarantee. Sometimes people get away with that just fine. If we treat the Proverbs as ironclad guarantees, we set ourselves up for a fall ourselves. The Proverbs are telling us this is the wise way to live. This is the better way to live. And so keeping this proverb in your mind will remind you, okay, yes, let's be careful. Let's not be full of myself. Even though there might be a few exceptions to the rule over here, it is wiser for us to recognize that is not the best way to go. But we cannot take them as ironclad guarantees. We'll be sorely disappointed if we do. Here's another popular one, chapter 22 and verse 1. "A good name is to be chosen rather than great riches, and favor is better than silver or gold." The situation here, just to throw this out, it's hypothetical, but it's certainly realistic. This has happened to people. Sometimes we can be tempted to grab the quick buck, or if there's a get-rich-quick scheme of some kind, we might want to go there because, you know, money, right? And so someone might be approached, hey, buddy, do you want to make a few bucks? I'll give you $100 cash if you just deliver this package to that guy over there. And then the guy finds himself being a mule for the drug trade and gets more and more involved. And yeah, he's raking in the cash and buying all the bling that he wants. But then finally the bottom falls out. He gets caught. He goes to jail. Then he leaves prison. And now he has to try to find a legitimate job with a criminal record for being a drug dealer. And it doesn't go so well for him. That's just merely one example, but at least it illustrates that it is wiser to ensure that your reputation is good than to simply go for the quick money because that seems more convenient. There's wisdom in holding on to that. There are also proverbs that really we have difficulty with, especially when people sometimes take the proverbs as being the command of God. For those within the church who have a view that every word in the Bible is as though it was spoken directly by God, God's self, they often see some of these proverbs as being what God is telling us we're supposed to do. And so Proverbs 23, verses 13 and 14 says this, "Do not withhold discipline from your children." Now, that's fine as far as it goes, right? Our children need to live with discipline. They need to know where the parameters are. There need to be an awareness that this you can't go any further. There's consequences if you go that far. We can't just let our kids just do whatever. We need to train them up and say, here are the parameters for right living. But here's what this 3,000-year-old proverb continues on to say. If you beat them with a rod, they will not die. If you beat them with the rod, you will save their lives from Sheol. If you beat your kids, you will save them from hell, is how it is taken. And so people who see that as being a direct command of God find themselves thinking, well, you know, God says, you're supposed to use corporal punishment. You're supposed to use that physical violence against your children. And you can see how many people end up using this to cover over what will amount to child abuse. Now, let me quickly say, this is the serious part of the sermon, Andrew. Just wait till we get home. In all seriousness, though, okay. I am not trying to suggest that the use of spanking is inherently child abuse. That's not what I'm trying to say. And some of you might disagree with me, fair enough. But what I am saying is that people have gone way too far with how they have raised and disciplined and chastised their children because of this verse by misusing this proverb and failing to see that it's 3,000 years old, back in a day when everybody treated their kids that way and that's what they felt was the right thing to do. And by failing to use wisdom in reading this wise proverb, they have continued to make a case for saying it's my right to do whatever I need to do to keep my kids in line and you can't say anything to me about that. That would be a misuse of the scriptures and failing to see the principle behind this proverb and others like it. We need to see what is the wise principle behind the saying and not just take the saying as it is and go, well, the Bible says it, so I just got to do it this way. It's unfortunate that it happens, but let's be wise as we approach this. Now, there's a longer proverb or two here as well. This one is a bit of a story that paints a very vivid picture, and I can't help as I read it but to think that this is being written by someone's firsthand experience. It's chapter 23, verses 29 to 35. Who has woe? Who has sorrow? Who has strife? Who has complaining? Who has wounds without cause? Who has redness of eye? Those who linger late over wine, those who keep trying mixed wines. Do not look at wine when it is red, when it sparkles in the cup and goes down smoothly. At the last, it bites like a serpent and stings like an adder. Your eyes will see strange things, and your mind utter perverse things. You will be like one who lies down in the midst of the sea, like one who lies on the top of a mast. They struck me, you will say,
but I was not hurt. They beat me, but I did not feel it. When shall I awake? I will seek another drink. The Bible has many references warning against drunkenness. Because, of course, when you get to that stage, you no longer are able to exercise good judgment and therefore not live according to wisdom. And so here we have this very vivid portrayal of what happens to someone who overindulges and gets to the point where they don't even feel anything and their minds utter perverse things. You'll never forget that image again, will you? Especially since your priest was reading like a drunk man from the lectern in church. So there it is. It'll just help reinforce the proverb. I have another proverb of my own, by the way. It says you should never drink anything you can see through. So therefore I drink dark coffee and dark ale and red wine. I do make an exception for water and for scotch, but that's beside the point. Anyway, a couple more. We have a couple of proverbs here that are back to back. It's chapter 26, verse 4 and verse 5. And if we take these as being direct commands of God, we would find ourselves at a bit of a loss, because here's what happens. Verse 4 says, "Do not answer fools according to their folly, or you will be a fool yourself." So the idea there is if you're coming across a whole bunch of people who are having a conversation or argument or whatever, and they're being complete idiots about it, just don't bother getting involved, because if you try to step in, you're just going to end up falling into the same trap that they're in, and you're going to look like an idiot too. So do not answer fools according to their folly. Verse 5 says, answer fools according to their folly, or they will be wise in their own eyes. So now it's saying if you come across someone having a conversation or argument and they're being complete idiots and dorks about the whole thing, look, get in there and set them straight so they can at least figure it out that they're clueless in their approach. So answer fools according to their folly, but don't answer fools according to their folly. Now people sometimes look at that and say cynically, the Bible just keeps contradicting itself. Well, hold on a second. Recognize that the one who compiled the book of Proverbs put those two side by side intentionally. It's not like he did that and went, oh yeah, there's a contradiction here. No. The point of Proverbs is to provide us some inclination, some insight as to how we might respond in different circumstances. So given the context, it might very well make a lot of sense just to not even go there with those people, because you know what? You're not going to win, right? Case in point, the angry people on the corner where the pride parade turns and they got all the angry signs, there's just no point in engaging at that point. Just don't, right? But at the same time, if you encounter a circumstance where people are having a discussion and they're completely off base, there might well be an opportunity for you to come in and shed some light. In which case, that kind of conversation could be beneficial and helpful even for them. The wisdom is knowing when the situation is right. Well, here's the last one. And this one is very wise. Chapter 27, verse 14. Whoever blesses a neighbor with a loud voice, rising early in the morning, will be counted as cursing. Get the picture? Sometimes our best intentions of doing something good and kind for other people don't get taken as being very good because the context wasn't very appropriate. So, good morning, neighbor, at 6:30 could very well be met with someone saying, go back to bed, you idiot. Don't you know what time it is, right? The book of Proverbs is full of all sorts of cool gems like this. And I'd encourage you to read it. So, if I was to assign some homework for you, let me do it this way. There are 31 chapters in the book of Proverbs. There are 31 days in the month of October. See the connection? Whatever the date is, that's the chapter you read. And the first number of chapters are kind of introductory and portraying the concept and so on. But once you get to the chapters where you get these little two-line proverbs, these little pithy sayings, I would encourage you to read them out loud and to pause between them. Just kind of let them sink in as you go through each one. That way they are more likely to stay stuck in your head or at least be easily retrieved in the future when it becomes helpful. Be aware that many of these proverbs will indeed entertain you. Some of them will cause you to think deeply. Others will offend you. Remember, it's a 3,000-year-old book, right? And in which case, when those offend you, once again, consider the original context and look for the principle behind the proverb, even if it offends. What is the wisdom that's being sought there? But as you read these, I think you will discover a great treasure trove of wisdom, something that you can hold on to. And when you read them and then pursue your life in a way that makes sense, in a way that we are encouraged to by this book, I think you will indeed find that when you trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not on your own understanding, when in all your ways you acknowledge him, he will indeed make your path straight. Amen.